I'm becoming every day that goes by less optimistic that's going to take place, but we'll see. It's a good goal to have.
Disagreements delay a gas pipeline deal and maybe the special session. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, September 11th. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaska's senators weigh in against the nuclear accord with Iran.
It's as if we're treating Iran as an equal. And Iran is not an equal to the United States of America.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Crowley, providing marine petroleum distribution and energy support services throughout Alaska since 1953, supporting business development while helping safeguard the environment. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. Alaska oil and gas have a huge impact on all of us, but how much do you really know about them? At akoilandgas.com, you can take an oil and gas IQ quiz and get the facts from reliable sources. This message sponsored by the Alaska Oil and Gas Association.
Governor Bill Walker will travel to Japan tomorrow for a week-long trip to promote Alaska's natural gas to potential buyers in Asia. The governor will be speaking at a summit in Tokyo and meeting with companies and industry representatives from around the region. But back at home, it's clear there are still major disagreements between the state and its partners in the Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Project, or AKLNG. That's the proposal for a massive pipeline to carry Alaska's natural gas from the North Slope to Nikiski for export. The state has proposed partnering with ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, and BP to shoulder the estimated $50 to $60 billion price tag. Lawmakers have been expecting the governor to call a special session to approve early agreements. Now, Walker says that's up in the air.
In a perfect world, we'd have all the agreements entered into with the consortium we're in right now and put that before the legislature. I'm becoming every day that goes by less optimistic that's going to take place, but we'll see. It's a good goal to have.
Walker says one major sticking point is an agreement on what would happen if one of the parties withdraws. He says it's possible he may call a special session just to discuss buying out a fourth partner, the Canadian pipeline giant TransCanada. The project is a major priority for the administration. Walker cited estimates that the pipeline could bring in more than $2 billion a year of revenue to the state, offsetting declines in oil revenue. The governor also replied to comments from Exxon CEO Rex Tillerson that Alaska has been its own worst enemy on the pipeline project. Tillerson told the publication World Gas Intelligence that changing demands from the state have delayed the project, saying every governor that comes in decides they've got a different way of doing this, which is why it never happens. Walker was unapologetic.
I know that some companies are not comfortable with how aggressive I am for representing Alaska, but that's my job and that's what I'm going to do.
And Walker says that's why he's going to Japan. The message there will be essentially, one way or another, Alaska is bringing gas to market.
We have failed in the past to step up and be Alaskans and act like a sovereign. It's time we act like the owner that we are, rather than sit back and let companies fit us into their portfolio as appropriate.
In a statement responding to Walker's comments, Exxon wrote that the company has consistently said the Alaska LNG project is the best option for commercializing Alaska's natural gas reserves. Senate Republicans on Thursday failed to get enough votes to advance a resolution rejecting the nuclear accord with Iran. Another vote is expected next week. Both Alaska senators spoke out against the deal. Senator Dan Sullivan says the promised inspections aren't serious and that the Obama administration gave up too much in the negotiations.
At a certain point, concessions become humiliations. If they are too significant and too frequent, concessions are humiliations. No one likes to be humiliated.
Sullivan says when he was in Alaska over the August recess, not a single constituent asked him to support the accord. The senator says veterans especially have a visceral opposition to the deal, a reaction he says lawmakers should heed.
It's as if we're treating Iran as an equal. And Iran is not an equal to the United States of America.
Sullivan says the Senate's Iran debate is really about the role of the United States in the world. Senator Lisa Murkowski also criticized the accord.
This is a deal that borders on capitulation and appeasement. A deal that rewards nuclear extortion.
Murkowski says the agreement would allow Iran to rebuild its economy and stay on the path to a nuclear weapon. She favors continued sanctions instead.
I absolutely reject out of hand the statement from our president that we have no choice, that it is either this deal or it is war. That is a false choice, and I think it is wrong to put it that way before the American people.
Other senators had equally passionate speech in favor of the deal. Vermont independent Bernie Sanders says many of today's Iran hawks also championed the invasion of Iraq, which he calls a tragic blunder. Sanders, who is running for president, says he hoped for a stronger deal.
But to my mind, it is far better than the path we were on, with Iran developing nuclear weapons capability and the potential for military intervention by the United States and Israel growing greater by the day.
The House today soundly defeated a bill to approve the Iran Accord. Alaska Congressman Don Young voted with opponents of the deal. It's been less than 2 weeks since Jim Johnson took the helm as president of the University of Alaska. And the transition in leadership is coming at a time when the university system is attempting to streamline and rethink the way it operates. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
Jim Johnson sees an opportunity amid the dark cloud of declining state funding and budget cuts throughout the University of Alaska system.
We play the single most important role in creating a knowledge economy for Alaska. And so when I look long term, that's the bright light that I'm looking at.
He sees that knowledge economy playing a pivotal role in helping Alaska diversify an economy that has been primarily based around oil. Specifically, on the heels of President Barack Obama's visit to the state, as well as the growing prominence of climate change, Johnson says there will be an increased emphasis on Arctic research.
We already lead the world in citations and academic journals on Arctic subjects. We're going to continue to drive that and continue to lead.
Despite the potential bright side of the university's future, there will be more years of declining state funding. And Johnson says he and the Board of Regents are taking that into account as they shape their budget requests for the next fiscal year.
We're certainly going to be looking again at cost effectiveness. Our approach is going to be modest because, again, we read the papers. I think we'll be very, very reasonable in our request to the legislature.
In anticipation of fewer state dollars to work with, Johnson says the University of Alaska and the University Foundation, which raises private money for the university, are pushing to develop a plan for alternative funding sources.
They have agreed and are partnering to build out a campaign that is heavily focused on alumni. It's in the early stages right now of the planning of that campaign, but that is, I think, a really important development that you'll be seeing soon.
And if a proposed plan is approved by the Board of Regents, Johnson could receive a performance bonus of $75,000 per year if certain benchmarks are hit. But he says he's planning on putting his own skin into the fundraising game.
My wife and I have talked about it, and we will donate the bonus money is whatever I'm able to achieve. We'll donate that to the university in various ways. We have yet to figure out exactly how.
The benchmarks the bonus would hinge on are increasing alumni donations, boosting the number of Alaska Native graduates, and cutting administrative costs by 10% annually. Johnson is on a 5-year contract, making $325,000 a year. Despite new potential revenue sources, Johnson says budget cuts are inevitable. Cuts at individual campuses have traditionally been made at the local level, and that will remain largely unchanged. From a statewide approach, Johnson says he'll be looking to reduce administrative costs. Johnson says there will also be an increased focus on collaboration and condensing of academic programs.
There is collaboration happening. You know, let's say there aren't enough students for a thermodynamics class in Anchorage, and there aren't in Fairbanks, but if they're combined and there's a faculty member available, you know, through video conferencing and other technologies, that thermo class can be taught on behalf of both universities by a faculty member, whether that person's in Anchorage or in Fairbanks. It really shouldn't matter.
Johnson says he is committed to visiting every UA campus during his first year as university president. The university faced a $28 million shortfall last year. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the new National Women's Hockey League opens up opportunities for one Alaskan.
There's so many amazing athletes that just don't do anything after college. It's like, well, if I'm not going to the Olympics, then I guess I'm done. Your career is just done.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Marine Conservation Council promotes local fishermen and seafood caught by Alaskans for Alaskans. More information at akmarine.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Marine Conservation Council. There is still time to start the Business Administration and Management Program at Alaska Pacific University. Module 2 courses start on Wednesday, October 21st. More at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
Construction of a new road to the Yukon River near Tanana is almost complete. DOT Northern Region spokesperson Meadow Bailey estimates the project is about 80% finished, with about 6 miles left to go before the road reaches the south bank of the Yukon across from Tanana. The project is building 20 miles of new roadway and improving 14 miles of existing road, extending north and west out of Manly Hot Springs. Bailey says the work schedule was thrown off by this summer's wildfires.
We lost about 3 weeks worth of work. We had to actually evacuate the project for a while because the fire was burning around the project and jumping back and forth across the road. So we expect the majority of the work to be done this year. There might be real minor things that need to be completed next year.
Once the road reaches the south side of the Yukon, DOT has no further plans or funding for building any more of the long-debated Road to Nome. The proposed corridor for that road travels along the north side of the Yukon, necessitating a bridge or ferry to get vehicles across the river. Bailey says DOT will watch how the road impacts the lifestyle and economy of Tanana before extending the road any further west along the Yukon River corridor.
You know, we'll see what the experience is for the residents of Tanana and if they feel like this is, you know, worthwhile, if it is decreasing their cost. I mean, these are things we'll look at in the future.
The Tanana City Council and the tribal councils of Manly, Ruby, and Tanana have all passed resolutions of support for the road in recent years. An estimated 35,000 walrus are currently crowding a barrier island just north of Point Lay. It's a phenomenon that's become more and more common as sea ice retreats from the Chukchi Sea. KNOM's Emily Russell reports.
The haulouts were first observed in 2007, coinciding with a record sea ice melt in the Arctic as sea ice extent plummeted to 39% below average. Female walruses and their young generally spend their summers on the sea ice, foraging in shallower areas for food. But as summer sea ice retreats, the walruses are forced to spend summers on shore. The large-scale haulout is concerning to both scientists and those who rely on them for food, as any disturbance can lead to deadly stampedes. Last year, an estimated 60 young walruses were killed due to the concentrated haulouts. Wildlife biologist Jonathan Snyder with Fish and Wildlife Service commended the nearby village for providing a safe place for the animals to haul out.
I think the fact that walrus continue to haul out near the community of Point Lay year after year is testament of the fact of the great stewardship role that that community has taken. I would imagine if that were not a safe place, the walrus would not keep returning.
Point Lay is doing its best to keep the walruses safe, but the village is frustrated by the media that won't keep their distance. In conjunction with Fish and Wildlife Service, USGS, and NOAA, the village of Point Lay issued a statement urging the media to keep their distance.
This community does not have the capacity to house anybody visiting. This is a small community. Our population is only about 246 people, and it's a subsistence community.
Leo Ferreira III, Tribal Council President of the Native Village of Point Lay, says the media isn't listening. At least one person has disobeyed the village's multiple requests to keep their distance. Gary Brosh, an environmental photographer, flew over the haulout on August 23rd. While he says he obeyed flight guidelines, a spokesperson for the Fish and Wildlife Service, speaking to the Guardian newspaper, says his photos show walruses that appear to be agitated, fleeing the area. Ferreira vented his frustration at the media.
It's a very disturbing one. You guys disrespect our way of living, disrespect our community and our wishes. Or the fact that you guys want a story and want to think you guys could come here and then go rent a boat, rent somebody's boat and go across and disturb the walruses on your guys' own. That's not permitted. Not even our own people are permitted to go over there and disturb the walruses with a mass haulout like this.
The community is working with the Federal Aviation Administration to issue notices and guidelines to pilots in the region. Ferreira says resident hunters have also been reduced or redirected away from the haulout. With freeze-up not expected until mid-October, the walruses are hunkered down on shore, and the community and scientists hope that disturbances can be kept to a minimum. Reporting from Nome, I'm Emily Russell.
Two new affordable housing complexes are opening in Anchorage this fall. Tenants have already started moving into the 18-unit Susitna Square in East Anchorage, but building the developments required much more than construction crews and moving vans. KSKA's Ann Hillman took a tour.
Come on up here.
Thanks.
I don't have anything yet. I just moved from Sacramento, in November, and I have been living with my parents.
Mei Lee walks up the newly carpeted stairs, paper slippers over her feet to keep the sparkling surfaces clean. For nearly a year, she and her three children have been living with eight other people in her mother's three-bedroom trailer.
Oh, it was three of us in one small room, and they live in a trailer. So it's really small, and then my son had to sleep in the couch. So, and sometimes he'll sleep on the floor, so I felt bad for him.
Lee is a single mom who moved to Anchorage to be close to family when her relationship fell apart. She found work within a month, but it took time to get housing she could afford while raising three kids on her own. Vacancy rates in Anchorage are less than 4%. Nationwide, it's closer to 7%. Lee walks through the three-story, two-bedroom, one-car garage apartment, fawning over closet space, the new refrigerator, and the chance to have some privacy.
It's a workout, though. I'll probably lose some weight later on. Go up these stairs.
Lee was one of 150 applicants for the 18 new units. Hundreds more applied for the 70-unit Ridgeline Terrace complex that's under construction in Mountain View. Brian Butcher is the CEO of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, which owns the project. He says it took 3 years and a complicated mix of funding to get the projects built.
You know, it's always kind of amazing that we actually got from where we first talked about the affordable housing to actually moving in, because there's just, it's so complex to do what you have to do to get affordable housing built in the community.
The two projects combined cost nearly $30 million. Butcher explains some of the money came from the usual sources, grants, tax-exempt bonds, and state and federal funding. But another chunk came from a private-public partnership. The units qualify for tax credits because they're low-income housing and because they feature an array of solar panels that cut energy costs by 10%. KeyBank bought the tax credits, and the money went towards construction. Butcher says that's what made the new developments possible, and the process is repeatable.
So it's our hope that we're able to do this over and over again, not just in Anchorage, but all over the state.
Rent for the units is subsidized so that families only pay about a third of their income. But it's only for a limited amount of time for families with working adults. AHFC works with clients and case managers to help families manage their finances, improve their skill sets, and transition toward paying higher rents. From the Urban Affairs Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Broken hips and head injuries can have life-altering effects, especially for older adults. But no matter how old you are, it's important to be physically active to prevent injuries. Activity can also increase your strength, balance, and can be done at any age. Ask your healthcare provider about activities that will improve your health. Learn more about starting a new activity at injuryprevention.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Annie Feit. This week on AK, professional hockey. The National Women's Hockey League will begin its first season this fall. The move is huge for female hockey players who until now had few options to pursue their careers past the college level. As APRN's Dave Waldron reports, one of the women who will be playing in the NWHL's inaugural season is a born and raised Alaskan.
Okay, full disclosure, I know almost nothing about hockey, and even less about women's hockey. During this story, dumb questions will be asked.
Have you ever been interviewed while running before?
I can't say I have.
Running on the treadmill is Zoe Hickel, and in case you're wondering, she is indeed related to Alaska's ex-governor Wally Hickel. But Zoe had a different calling in life, and it's one that keeps her in the gym a lot.
Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Wednesday is like a day off. Or you can do some more conditioning on that day or whatnot.
When Hickel was growing up, she was an avid skier and hockey player. But then high school came, and she was forced to choose between the two. She chose hockey.
I think the biggest thing is the team sport, like the team aspect of, and yes, ski teams have, you know, their team as well, but it's so individual focused, and it, as much fun as it is, I don't know, there's something about being with your best friends on the ice and battling it out, and just having a blast. I think that was the biggest thing, is the team atmosphere.
The choice wasn't an easy one. After all, there wasn't a girls' hockey team at Anchorage's Service High, so she played on the boys' team. Hickel says she wouldn't change any of it.
I'm sure there were some guys who didn't like me or didn't like playing against me or whatever it is, you know, but for the most part, it was a pretty, it was a great town with support, and my coaches supported me and my teammates supported me. As long as that was happening, then I felt like I was safe there.
After high school, Hickel went on to play the collegiate circuit at the University of Minnesota Duluth as a forward. But as she was finishing up college, she realized her time playing hockey professionally was likely coming to an end.
Right now, you can't make a living playing hockey after college. So for a lot of females, after their college career, there's so many amazing athletes that just don't do anything after college. It's like, well, if I'm not going to the Olympics, then I guess I'm done. Your career is just done.
But then something happened.
Big news broke for women's hockey today. Women hockey players will have a new chance to get paid for their puck skills. The National Women's Hockey League will begin later this year. The league contains four teams, the Buffalo Buttes, Boston Pride, New York Riveters, and Connecticut Whale.
Shortly after the announcement, Hickel was contacted by the Boston Pride, and it didn't take long for her to agree to terms with the team this season. She says she's thrilled to be making history and hopes the NWHL can change the stereotype that girls shouldn't be playing hockey.
Hopefully this league will inspire young ladies and we can get them to our games and get the word out that, you know, women can play hockey, and this is something that, you know, little girls can look up to and hopefully grow our sport.
All right, dumb question alert. I can't help but ask the only thing I know about hockey. Is there going to be fighting?
Girls are sneaky. I'd say girls are just sneaky. Everyone thinks that there's no body contact in women's hockey. There's plenty of it. There's plenty of body contact, especially at the higher levels. The higher level you get, the refs are going to let you play, and that's the way we like it. So, not that I don't know if someone's going to come to a women's game to see a fight break out, like go watch roller derby or something. I don't know.
All joking aside, Hickel says she couldn't be more excited to keep doing what she's wanted to do since she was 8 years old.
I can't wait to be an inspiration to the future generations coming through, and I'm honored to be a part of the inaugural season.
Okay, this is my last bad question, I promise.
So no chance of you being a politician anytime soon, like a your great uncle?
Yeah, I don't know if that's my route. Who knows? Maybe after my hockey career, I'll look into that.
Hickel begins her first practice with the Boston Pride on Tuesday. For AK, I'm Dave Waldron.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week, we're talking with Mike McCormick, the founder and co-owner of Whistling Swan Productions in Anchorage.
My dad lived in Alaska in the 1940s, and so I grew up with stories about Alaska. He lived all over the place, Nome, Adak, Big Delta, Kodiak. So when I got out of college, I really loved wilderness. I liked hiking, so I wanted to come to Alaska. When I got to Alaska, I missed the music and I missed the Red Sox. Couldn't do much about the Red Sox, but I could do something about the music. We actually started doing, my wife and I, Katie, we actually started doing concerts in Alaska in 1987. And then it became formally Whistling Swan in 1994. Really excited about the shows we have all year, especially an early October show with John Sebastian, who was the first person I ever saw in concert when he was with the Lemon Spoonful. I saw him in late July, early August, 1966, about a week before, or maybe even days before, the Summer in the City became the number one song in the nation. The basic thing that drives us is we bring music that we love here. And that's the basic thing, and we just have to trust that other people out there love it. There's nothing magical about it. It's a lot of hard work, and there's sometimes luck. Sometimes the tickets sell so fast you can't even believe it. And then sometimes you're begging just for one or two people to buy a ticket. You're just hoping to have a critical mass so the artist isn't embarrassed. People make a difference. Somebody builds a Vagabond Blues. What a difference that has made one person's action in that community. Leaders decide to open up the Alaska Performing Arts Center. That contributes. All these things contribute. All these little pieces of people contributing to the puzzle.
Mike McCormick is co-owner of Whistling Swan Productions in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every person in Alaska on the radio. And we want to hear from you. If you want to share your story, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Annie Feit.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter on APRN. We had reports tonight from Tim Bodoni in Galena, Emily Russell in Nome, and Ann Hillman in Anchorage. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C., and Rachel Waldholtz and Josh Edge from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
And by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. The Alaska Department of Education is looking for 3 experienced Alaskan educators to help underperforming schools improve instruction and student performance. These school improvement coaches would work as contractors to the state. Apply by September 15th. Call 907-465-8721 or inquire at the Department of Education for information. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Education.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.